because you're jumping back into the gap. I'll let the coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Lead the country in offensive rebound.
Hey, coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver. Let's share the game. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. Today's guest is Zach Boisvert. Did I say that in French, Zach?
Boisvert would be the more Canadian or French pronunciation.
That's awesome. And welcome to the show. And long overdue to have you here. And current Army assistant basketball coach, but had various stints at Maine, Iona, and Fairleigh Dickinson as well. And, you know, most importantly for most people that follow us, we run websites part-time to share the game. And what a tremendous job you're doing that. And the pickandpop.net is one of my go-to resources, as well as I know many coaches. So thanks for doing that and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate you having me. I love these podcasts you've done. I've been a big fan of the website, even before the website, your Twitter work. And so just happy to be here talking the game.
Well, and a great example of the power of the internet nowadays. And, you know, you and I knew each other before essentially we launched Basketball Immersion, or I launched Basketball Immersion. And, you know, we got to know each other a little bit through online world. And for most people, they might be surprised we've never met in person, but we've talked many times about the game. And this is going to be great for people to talk about. So, coach, let's get into it right away. We wanted to hammer away a little bit of a topic that we both love and we're both curious about how people coach it, and that's defensive rebounding.
Yeah, it's something that I just think the sophistication, the level of sophistication in our coaching in the game has really increased in a number of areas across the board. And I think one spot that it hasn't necessarily has been rebounding. And I just don't think their level of sophistication on the ideas and how we coach it has reached the point in with rebounding that it has in other areas. So it's just something that I want to nerd out a little bit, talk to you about, and see if there was a better way we could coach it. Because right now, the way to coach it, I think, is the teams that are really good at it, the coaches that are really good at it, just place a ton of emphasis on it. And it's something they're crazy about and maniacal about. And I wonder, is there a better way to teach it? Or is that simply, it's a barbarian exercise to begin with, and that's the best way to do it, is just making a big deal to your players?
Well, and it brings home to me that, you know, the perfect kind of topic to discuss a little bit is the game's approach versus the drill approach as well, because, you know, clearly when you talk about an emphasis, are we creating an emphasis through drills, or are we just creating an emphasis through everything we do already? Or, you know, is there, again, some magical drill that solves all your rebounding problems? And I think we would both agree there isn't, but is that part of the process of breaking it down and teaching it?
Yeah, it's great, actually. One of the best things I've ever heard about rebounding was the late, great Rick Majerus. College basketball practice used to always start on a Friday night, and they would practice Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And Rick Majerus would run three rebounding drills on Friday night, three rebounding drills on Saturday, three on Sunday. And he just used to, be adamant about, we're going to be a great rebounding team. Now, that last rebounding drill on Sunday would be the last rebounding drill they would do all year long. Just the rest of the time, rebounding would become just a paramount subject in every drill they did, every live 5-on-5 play they did, something that I'm sure other coaches have heard about. But there was a coach designated specifically for rebounding in all scrimmage type environments. There was one coach dedicated to rebounding, and that certainly has picked up some steam, and I think there's some value to that. But I just found it incredible that Rick Majerus would start practicing, this is really important, three drills Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then end it. And it would just, at that point on, it just became a point of emphasis during live play. And I thought that was really interesting. You mentioned drills. I'll say something that I think one of the greatest oxymorons existing in our game is game-like rebounding drill. I've yet to see one. I just think as soon as you say rebounding drill, it just isn't how the game happens. As soon as you say rebounding drill, everyone knows it's going to be a miss. Everyone's just thinking about rebounding. Well, that's not how the game works. And I want to kind of talk and bounce that between you and I, because I think you're onto something there. What does a game's approach to rebounding look like?
Well, and that is the challenge of it. As you said, it's really hard. I think it applies to fast break drills that we traditionally do, and I think it applies to rebounding drills. It's really hard to make them realistic because the way we run the drill is very scripted. And the way rebounds happen is the opposite. They happen in messy, chaotic ways, and as you say, barbarian ways. And how do you simulate that? Because the other part of that, which I like coming back to that Rick Majerus story that you just said about the three drills, is when you do rebounding drills, you beat the crap out of your own team. And that's another part in this era of really being concerned about work to rest ratios and different things like that, is that like to do a rebounding drill after the first few practices does have more of a negative impact on your team in some ways than any other drill you could possibly have.
Yeah, the physical toll on that, I didn't even think about that from that viewpoint of the physical toll that a rebounding drill takes on. And I think that's where you just have to find, and that's where I kind of pondering, and I'm the classic assistant coach here coming forward to the problem without a great solution here. But, you know, I'm just wondering, is there a way we can teach it better? There have been things, and I think, and can we do that without the physical toll of bone-to-bone contact with rebounding drills? And I think that there's a lot of it about catching them doing something right. And I think a way to do it is via the use of film and just try to glorify the rebounding efforts that you want and glorify out of area rebounds, engaged rebounds, guards coming down. And I think there's some value to that. And I think that's where maybe without the physical toll, I think that's where you might be able to extract some value and be able to improve your rebounding.
That's great. And certainly my mind leaps to video as well and says, you know, again, with the staffs that some of NCAA programs or NBA programs have, I mean, it's much easier to be able to dive into that and say, okay, listen, we can highlight these moments. And I had a chance to watch a G League team in a video session this year. And that was one of the things that I call it noticing progress, because as you know, I mean, it's really easy to notice progress of your best players, but the little details and the little things that lead to the best player having success are the harder things to notice progress about. And the team that I saw did exactly what you said. They noticed progress of players rebounding the ball that led to break opportunities or led to the end of a great defensive stop. You know, in some cases, they were kills as well with three stops in a row. And, you know, just that little detail, I thought, created a great emphasis for rebounding.
Yeah, and I think being able to, like you said, notice progress. And I think I've heard stories of simply, there's a legendary, it's actually a Princeton offense team in college basketball, that after years of being terrible at rebounding, essentially, the assistant coach was promoted to being the head coach. And he said, I'm done being bad, you know, being considered soft and being bad defensive rebounding. We're going to be really good at it. And after consulting with a couple people in the industry, came up with, he was going to chart defensive blockout. And that's another approach that I think has had some success with rebounding, of every time a shot goes up, and it's kind of a monotonous task at times for coaches, but it's something that you're bringing accountability to the exercise of, did you block out? And for guards, it wasn't necessarily a blockout. It was, they were checking to see if their man was coming and then taking steps into the paint. Because at times that elbow and nail area can be a great defensive rebounding spot for a guard, because as they walk into that, one, balls end up there, but also any rebound, any missed shot by the opponent that's rebounded by the guard, it automatically initiates that fast break and really gets them going. And so for the team, it was, did the bigs block out? If the guard happened to be underneath, he was in charge of the block out. But if he was guarding a guy on the perimeter, he just needed to turn and check and then take two steps in the paint. And essentially that coach drastically improved his team's rebounding with that exercise of every game charting that. And each player, they would have a team blockout percentage and each player blockout percentage and have a punishment or have, you know, those scores were posted. And his team's rebounding dramatically improved with a guy having individual accountability on how well of a job he did, not a rebounding, but blocking out. And then there was a team score as well. And I thought there was some value to that and an ability to chart progress, like you said.
What a tremendous commitment to that too. And I don't think I want that job, but you know, if you have the resources, it's an incredible thing to be able to do that. And you know, the one thing I come back to, and I ask you this, is if we emphasize the block out so much, are we de-emphasizing just go get the ball?
And that's where, as we're kind of struggling to understand where rebounds come and what's the best form of rebounding, is that the best thing is to talk about blockouts, or is it simply to encourage a guy to go get the ball and, you know, chase it outside of the area and maintain vision of the shot, maintain vision of the ball on the shot. And as it hits the rim, that's the most important thing. I mean, those are conversations that's where I want to bring some thought to it, because I wonder what the best way to do it is.
Well, and traditionally we've taught, you know, on the perimeter that you tee up to rebound, defensive rebound. You don't turn your back to a perimeter rebound or offensive rebounder. You tee up so you can put shoulder to chest relationship is what I call a tee up, so that you can see both. And then also you have some leverage if someone runs in. And then at the rim, traditionally, I've taught a butt box out, which is more traditional because you can get low and you can dig in and push someone away from the rim. But I've also had players where they've just been so good at that technique that they've just have never rebounded outside their area. And I've said to many of them, is just like, okay, let's forget about the box out. Just go get the ball. And again, I don't know how much quantitative data I have to support it, but in my qualitative experience, they seem to be better rebounders when they just go get it. But I don't think you can have a whole team of just go get it. There has to be a balance of box out and go get it.
And I agree with you. And that pursuit of the ball is so important. It's the most important one, but it can't just be four guys, like you're saying, your whole team flying at the rebound, you know, and no one balking out. And I think they're, you know, finding that harmony of certain guys being block out guys. But then again, how, like, what is the quantitative evidence for a guy to go get, you know, you're a go guy and you're just going to get it while everyone else is blocking out? That's what's hard. But I think the most important thing is, if you have a guy that's good at it, I would work like hell to not screw him up. Because if he's able to have that nose for the ball and being able to go get it, maybe going in to get it outside of his area, I think that's where you recognize that and give him some leeway. And I think so much, and I know I sound like a typical, you know, American college coach talking about, but I think a lot of it gets back to recruiting, that you know, some of those guys just have a nose for the basketball and just can go get it. And you want those guys on your side, and you want to make sure they're suiting up for you.
Well, and these are great things for all coaches to consider, because again, it comes back to, especially if we're talking about the high school level, the AU, the youth level, is you have minimal time to get your team ready to play. So what are you going to teach when it comes to rebounding? And are you going to invest a tremendous amount of your practice time in something like rebounding drills that potentially don't have any transfer to the game? And that's where I come back to what you said, probably maybe on track, is that, like, okay, you can't chart it. You don't have all that ability to do it. Even video, you don't have that ability to isolate every rebound and say, great job. But let's start with a few drills that emphasize it. But after that, it's got to be within the day-to-day, everything you do.
And I think at the end of the day, that's what coaching is these drills are really, you know, fancy drills are nice and it'll look good. But I think at the end of the day, coaching is the ability to observe and the ability during five-on-five play to be able to extract details and extract teaching points and five-on-five and to bring it back to central themes and central points of emphasis. That's what coaching is to really closely watch and see stuff. And that's where I think that's what rebounding is. And that's what you're talking about within five-on-five play, be able to, you know, talk and closely watch and pick out coaching points and teaching points. That's coaching. And it doesn't sound sexy. It's not fancy, but that is coaching.
Yeah. No, that's a great, great point. And coach, you said nail rebounding. And this is something that through, and maybe the same for you, from being in the NBA a little bit at practices or talking to NBA coaches, this is where that point was driven home to me, the importance of nail rebounding and really sending your outlet as a point guard or a guard that can go to that nail area. Because the chart that was sent to me was basically that, so let's say 10,000 shots are shot in the nail area, and absurdly high percentage of rebounds, regardless of where the shot is taken, end up in the nail area. And the nail area, so coaches know, is kind of the dotted circle at the top of the key or somewhere in that area there.
Now, Chris, we're in dangerous territory right here, losing some of our listeners about, but you and I are nerdy enough that we have looked at that, looked at those charts, and over thousands and thousands of shots, there is a consistent theme that runs out that shots taken, particularly in the above the break, yep, come through the elbows at a very highly rate. And so without, you know, losing that part of our audience, that is a spot you want to get bodies to. And again, there is that extra carrot on top that oftentimes if you're sending a guard there, now they're collecting a rebound and they're pushing up the court. I first heard that philosophy through Pete Newell, was very innovative in a lot of his rebounding philosophies. And there are things that have stayed in the game. There's also things that have been forgotten a little bit, and especially on the offensive side. And I'd like to get into that a little bit. But essentially, he talked about positional rebounding, where every time a shot went up, he wanted to fill certain spots on the floor. And one of those was that nail area. Byron Scott with the Nets really pushed that forward with Jason Kidd, and that Jason Kidd was such a phenomenal rebounder, and he was also a guy that if he got a rebound, it could really push the break. There's a guy like Terry Rozier, who's incredible with the Celtics, at that. And I put a little edit together. Lonzo Ball was another guy at UCLA that was fantastic at it. I put a little edit with our guard, with one of our guards this past year, of Terry Rozier doing it. And I just encouraged him to watch it a couple times and just try to put it into play. And it was very interesting to see the leap he made with simply that attention, that detail. And he really, in conference play, averaged about 5.5 rebounds a game, led our team in rebounding. And he was really able to collect those by getting to the nail. And then, you know, once he did, it really initiated our break pretty well.
That's pretty cool, because we had a point guard that led us in rebounding too this past year, and same reason.
The legendary Bobby Hurley would always talk about, and he would even take it a step further, where he'd encourage his bigs to hold blockouts. And this is Bob Hurley at St. Anthony, Bobby Hurley's dad. But he would encourage his point guard, hey, your man's not going to the glass. You should be going in and flying. Our point guard should be leading our team in defense rebounds every year. And so as everyone else on their box outs, you have no box out responsibility. You should just be going and flying and grabbing it off the rim and pushing the break. And that was a different approach to rebounding, but I thought it was a really interesting one I wanted to share.
No, and again, Coach, I mean, this is relevant for all, because again, tradition and the historical way we teach outlets is get wide to the wing, right? That's the historical way we teach it. And this data and this evidence going back to Pete Newell suggests that we shouldn't be teaching outlets to the wing. We should be teaching outlets down the middle. And again, that's a philosophical change. Maybe coaches don't want to leap there, but we did that this year. We emphasized, regardless of who rebounded it, we wanted a player down the middle, and it sped us up so much. And it just got us to space much faster. And it eliminated so many pauses in our break, where you're trying to get someone to fan out. And
he's not in that exact spot. And, you know, I think it's really interesting. I think you've hit on, and I think this is the core of all these podcasts you do and all the work you do with Basketball Immersion, where it's the most dangerous phrase in language is, well, you know, we've always done it that way. And one thing I appreciate that you've done is you've constantly challenged, why are we doing it that way? Why? Is that the right way, or is that the way we've always done it? And that's what I've appreciated. And even in this conversation, I've kind of sensed that light bulb's gone off for me 3 or 4 times of you talking about that phrase. But that's something I really like, without significantly saying that phrase, something that you do within your podcast and within your website, of just, we've always outletted to the wing. Is that the right way, or is that just because 70 years ago we arrived and said that's the right way? Well, is it actually the right way? And right. That's what I find so interesting. That's why I love these conversations.
Well, me as well. And, you know, we both said it to each other numerous times that, and to make it clear, neither of us is right. Neither of us is right.
I was right once.
It's part of this process. And I just, again, I've been so grateful for all these conversations and getting into this. And Coach, let's go back to positional rebounding.
Yeah.
I've been with a coach a long time ago that was big on positional rebounding. I thought it was outstanding as well. And it's, again, it's a system to give your players an understanding of where they should be. And it can't be rigid in the sense that that's exactly where you're always going to go, but it's got to be within that area. That's your responsibility. Now, when you've seen that taught, have you seen that taught, Coach?
I haven't seen it taught in a day-to-day structure. I've read Pete Newell's books about it. I've really been intrigued by it. I've seen it enacted a little bit where I was just watching teams and saying, I think that's what's going on, but I haven't seen the day-to-day implementation of it.
Okay, well, let's say simplicity's sake. Let's say, okay, two bigs go to the block area, two guards go to the elbow area, and then the other guard is a freelancer. That's kind of the rough system that I was a part of for that year.
Yeah.
The one thing that became interesting is the same debate I get into about numbered breaks. Does the one player have to go to that exact same spot all the time, or do they get to eventually change, you know, sides? If they're on one side, they're going to go to that side and that side. And the coach I worked with was very adamant that they had to go to the exact spot all the time, because then he knew he'd have coverage on that spot. And as you can imagine, that created a great inflexibility in terms of someone just, hey, just go get the ball.
Yeah, not knowing that coach, not saying he's wrong. I view that as a little too rigid. I view that as just understanding the spots that we want to fill on a missed shot. Pete Newell wasn't nearly as rigid as that, but essentially it was, where do we want to get to when a shot's taken? The one everyone knows is the weak side, and we underestimate just how many of those go to the weak side, particularly a three-pointer shot from the wing area. I mean, it is going to that weak side, and we should tie in, you know, Mike Dunlap has been innovative. We're talking about flooding the weak side and really trying to get more bodies to that weak side, both offensively and defensively. But just, I think it's more about getting to spots that we want to fill on a missed shot. And then it's important to note too, that a lot of what Newell was talking about with these, this positional rebounding, particularly was with also with offensive rebound. Now it was a different kind of game back then. There were more bodies around the hoop because of, you know, there was no 3-point line, but a lot of what he was talking about was offensive rebounding philosophy of playing with the missed shot in mind of where do we want to get to when that shot's taken. And that correlated directly to his transition defense, which is so funny to think about that for Pete Newell, his first phase of transition defense was actually offensive rebounding. And now it's interesting to see what's happened in the game where so many coaches view those two things as opposed to each other. We can't offensive, you know, we don't want offensive rebound because we want to get back in transition. It's really interesting to see how it's changed at Pete Newell. The first phase of his transition defense was one, not turn the ball over. The second one was our offensive rebound attack, and that it was going to slow the opponent's ability to defensive rebound and push. It's very interesting how the game has changed. There's been some revealing data. I read a great article the other day about the updated math of transition defense and offensive rebounding. I think there's some thinking that we have to do as coaches about if that's really true of what we think about how going to the glass hurts our transition defense. And I think as coaches, we have to do some really hard thinking about if that's true and what aligns with our philosophy.
Well, and again, does that apply at lower levels? And that's what I've always said about offensive rebounding is some of the NBA data, I don't believe applies the same at lower levels because of the variance of missed shots and also the advantage of getting offensive rebounds. And, you know, it's hard to score at some of the other levels because you don't have as many talented players. So offensive rebounding can be a great equalizer in that sense too.
And I think that the lower level you go, the more important easy baskets become, and offensive rebounds are really an easy basket. And I think it's something that I just want to dive into offense rebounding a little bit there. I think it's simply a matter of the more you go after, the more you get. It's great to talk about all these offensive rebounding moves. I think the most important thing is availability. And the more you go after, the more you get. The vast majority of offensive rebounds occur when someone isn't blocked out. So it's more about just going. The exercise I love to do is when I'm talking to a post player and talking to him about that concept, I say, name a rebounder in the NBA, and they come up with a guy, and we're in my office, and I say, name someone, and I go into Synergy, which I have access to as a college coach, and I click, go to his offensive rebounds, I click the last, you know, I'll say the last 20, let's look at the last 20, and I'll make a little push-up wager with him, and I'll tell you, if he beats a block out on more than three of these next 20, I owe you 10 push-ups, all right, and we'll watch, and on 19 of the 20, the guy just simply wasn't blocked out, he went and got it and scored it, or when it, you know, on one of them he spins away and gets around and gets that and is able to score it. But like the vast majority is simply, did you go? Because if you went, that puts you in a position to get an offensive rebound. I think that's where, as coaches, I think there are some things that we can do to generate easy baskets schematically, and I think one of them is our offensive rebounding philosophy. What are we doing? How many guys are we sending? And then also, what are we teaching with that? It's amazing when I go to practices at all levels, how much back to the basket work the third best post player on a team gets. And he's getting rep after rep of low post moves. And there's an element, hey, you want to grow that person, you want to develop those skills. But if you pause and think for a second, you know, how many post up opportunities is that kind of guy going to get all year? And then think for a second, how many offensive rebounding opportunities is that guy going to get? So, for that, you know, maybe you do throw it into first post player. And I'm not saying, hey, don't work on back to the basket moves. I'm just saying, is what you're working on with your roster correlate to their role within the team and what's going to happen a lot in the games? Because as Pete Carril said, work on the things that happen a lot. I know I went about a million different directions with that offensive rebounding idea, but Chris, take that wherever you want it.
A quick interruption to this week's episode to let you know what you're missing if you are not currently a member of BasketballImmersion.com. Basketball Immersion is one-stop shopping for video learning to stimulate your basketball coaching using evidence-based practices. Watch hundreds of videos covering BDT shooting, zero-second skill training, how we teach using small-sided games and a games approach to coaching, as well as team concepts and systems like trail trap, flow offense, two-sided fast break, and much, much more. NCAA NBA, pro, high school, and youth coaches are amongst the thousands of coaches who are a part of our community. Go to basketballimmersion.com today to stimulate your basketball coaching.
Well, the first way I'll take it is that I believe the offseason is selfish time for players' development, and in-season is about team success. So with that player, I think you could find that balance. And I think you're totally on the right track. It's like not every player is the same and not every player has the same role. So within team practices, we shouldn't be grouping them according to, you know, posts and guards. We should be grouping them according to role to a certain extent. And, you know, certainly at different levels, it's easier to do that with staffs and whatnot. But if you send a number, say, let's say against certain teams, we want to send four to the boards. We've traditionally tried to send four to the boards. Whether we do or not get four to the boards, it's more about emphasis within our program to say we want to be an aggressive team. We think we're good enough to get back. And also we've assessed that most teams in our league don't run. So we don't have that problem getting back as much that we've done that. But then we go into certain games and we say, okay, oh, you know, my assistants, one of the first things they'll say is, oh, we should only send two to the boards in this game. Like, are players capable of making that switch? Like, there's some things that I always think are coaching clinics, and there's other things that I think, okay, a player can't do that. Like, a player can't switch that fast. And if I do, do I just completely discount everything I've taught all year?
It's a really interesting question. It's something that I always want to ask some of our players. Now, I will ask them at the end of the year. I'll ask them about certain things we've done scouting-wise, and I'm saying, hey, does that work? Like, you know, when we say that, like, we'll talk about a guy. One thing in scouting I'll hear a lot of guys say is, hey, make him finish at the rim, don't foul. And I asked our guys, I was like, hey, when we say that, like, what do you hear? Does that help you at all? And a guy said, no, like, my goal was never foul a guy. Like, kind of always, like, I never knew what that meant. And so, you know, those are good conversations to have. I think there's a theory of a guy is a go guy or a get back guy. And I think it's really hard to change him from one game to the next. And I think the best way to do it is simply he has a role, and maybe at times your team, depending on who's on the floor, your offensive rebound philosophy can shift. If you have a guy who's a tremendous athlete at the two and he's a go guy, you know, maybe there's only one guy getting back. That's something you have to think about. Maybe it's just your point guard getting back because the other four are going, or maybe you're playing a three-man who doesn't go, and now you have three guys getting back, only two guys going to glass. I think it should dial back a little bit. It's also really hard with what's going on offensively right now and how spread teams are playing. It's really hard to do both. It's really hard to play four at one end and play with great spacing and perimeter shooting and get guys on the glass, because that four-man, I was just about to say, hey, your four and five should always go, and your three, if he's in an opportunity to go, he should go. But, like, our four-man plays as much on the perimeter as our two and our three. So should he be going? That's where I struggle at times with adapting offensive rebound philosophy. I think it's more not about transition defense, because I think at the end of the day, your transition defense is about the guys that aren't going, sprinting back and building a wall and getting back. Their job is different than the guys going to the glass. So I think the thing I'm struggling with is, how does our offensive rebound philosophy shift to how spread we're playing and how we're four out one in, and that second rebound of that four man, he's nowhere near the rim oftentimes.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, I mean, and potentially, obviously, your transition defense is better if your four is back anyways, because then you're bigger at the rim and building that wall with more size. So, you know, a lot is changing in perimeter rebounding. But again, like, the spacing on offense does create a bigger advantage to offensive rebound.
Yeah.
Because it's much harder to block out space than it is no space. And that's another question I think coaches are going to have to figure out. And again, we know the NBA level, generally, they're going to get back. That seems like what it is.
Yeah. I think, you know, at times, I think that might be the best way to talk about it, is just your positioning on the court when that shot goes up. I think, you know, if you're on the strong side outside the three, I think, you know, by position, maybe you're saying, hey, to your three, fours, and fives, at any time, if you're on the weak side below the break, you're going to the rim. If you're above the break, hey, we're getting back. If we're on the strong side, we're getting back. And I think that might be the best way to do it. But I do think that finding a way to hold them accountable for the effort when they do go, and did you go or did you not go, I think there's some value to that. And I think that's where you can really find some easy baskets.
Well, and based on those offensive stats we talked about the nail, should we be sending an offensive rebounder to the nail? Should we not try to send someone to the rim?
And that's a good point. And I think I want to make one more note about offensive rebounding. Yeah. Is I swear shot selection is a hot topic for you, but I swear the worst shots, some of the worst shots in the game are taken following offensive rebounds. That there's rebounders think that they have this earthly, this, you know, innate right to shoot a ball no matter what situation, circumstance they're in. If they just got an offensive rebounding, they just find a way to shoot it. And I just think that there's, that's not the way to do it. And I think Jay Wright at Villanova does something great, that his rule at Villanova is on any offensive rebound, that if you can go up and dunk it, you go up and dunk it. But anything else is kicked out, and they try to kick it out, swing, and quickly get it to the weak side. And the thing I really love about that is, so anytime during 5-on-0, I know that's another hot-button topic for you, but any 5-on-0, any offensive rebound, the big, if he can go dunk it, he does. But if not, it's kicked out, swung to the weak side, and they try to hunt those weak side threes that Bob McKillop calls a dagger. But I love how there's that implementation of it during 5-on-0. It's constantly repeated as they go throughout the season.
I'm all in. Like, we actually call it an offensive rebounding system, and we spend time breaking down our offensive rebounding system. And, you know, and I'll explain how we do that. A lot of that has to do with exactly what you're saying, is that you're one-on-one. If you're one-on-one, it's got to be someone who can score one-on-one at the rim. And if not, it's a kick out. It's a kick out. Now, if you're 1-on-0 on an offensive rebound, then we want you to score, because that's the translation of, well, if you can't dunk, like, we want you to try and score if you're 1-on-0 immediately. But if not, then we do want to try and space out and kick out for a three and, you know, keep it going. And as you said, the dagger, we'll steal that now. But that's exactly it. Offensive rebounding creates a great opportunity to be able to shoot a three or to shoot a perimeter shot, because everyone collapses on an offensive rebound generally. Should you rebound your own shot is my constant thing. And it's one of my other rants, I guess, at youth levels, is you hear parents in the stands and you hear coaches, and you probably hear it the whole AAU, rebound your shot. And it's like, well, why are you rebounding your shot? Like, aren't you making your shot? And if you're thinking about rebounding your shot, you're definitely not thinking about making your shot. And then what are the percentage of rebounds that come back to the shooter? And all these different things that come into play, that there's one I'd like to get rid of, is I just think the value of holding your follow through and holding your shot is way more valuable than thinking about rebounding your shot, which is also planning in your mind, hey, I'm missing.
And that's the last thing I want going through the mind. I think that guy should be sitting there holding his follow through and then maybe drifting up the court to get back on defense. The last thing I want is him thinking about following your shot. And I think that's, like you said, it's that perfect, like, 9-year-old CYO lament that, you know, you hear from the stands. There is some value in, it's not the most institutionalized data, but I have seen some things that about the percentage of shots rebounded that are taken in the paint by the guy that missed them. And I do think there's a value for some of your post players on, like, one-on-one back to the basket moves, that he has an idea of where that, when that ball comes off his hand, where that shot might be going. And there is some, again, it almost goes back to our earlier point about that's an innate thing, that, like, you just let a guy go. But there's some guys that just with a knack for rebounding their own miss around the rim. And I think if you can maybe introduce that topic with your post player and then just see if he has that nose for it, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't.
Well, that's great, because that definitely is different than what I'm saying. Like, correct, at the rim, I totally agree that there's advantage to that. And, you know, you say second jumps or whatever it is, but there's an advantage certainly for certain players. But again, is that something we should be spending time teaching? And that's what I come back to with everything that we're talking about right now, is that ultimately you have a finite amount of time as a coach, and you have to decide, what are you going to teach and what are you going to spend time on? If I'm spending all this time on rebounding drills, it's taking away from other things, and we're not getting good at other things that maybe have more of an impact on the game. And again, not to discount rebounding as an impact on the game. So, coach, how we'll do it, we don't do a pure rebounding drill, but what we'll do is we'll do something called closeout rebounding, which is, say we have four players on the perimeter, one player at the rim. The defense will start basically under the rim. This is the first of, say, three possessions up and down the court. After that, we're live. But a coach will throw it into one player. That player has to close out. The other four players obviously go to help positioning. And then that player who catches the ball has to shoot the ball. So we're starting with a live shot and rebounding that possession. And then from there, whatever happens, happens. So we could be an offensive rebounding reaction if we get it, or we're in defensive rebounding reaction, or we're inbounding the ball and going. And it just creates an emphasis to say to our guys, listen, we've got to focus on the tee up. We've got to focus on the butt box out. But after that, we're just playing three trips live and we see what happens. But that's one way we do it. And then the other way we do it is we start with a one-on-one drill and we just one-on-one to five-on-five. And I'm big on that in general, but you know, you do all these one-on-one box out drills. Like you're saying, if Coach Majerus did a one-on-one box out drill, it's like, okay, after that, just start your five-on-five from that one-on-one box out drill. So say I self-toss it off the rebound. The offensive rebounder gets it at the rim. The defensive rebounder now is in a wall-up position. So it's one-on-one at the basket. And now we're working offensive rebounding reaction versus one-on-one reaction in the post. So we're working on that dagger versus try and score at the rim. So that's a one-on-one drill. Self-toss, play one-on-one on the rebound. Well, now we're just playing five-on-five out of that. So those are the two ways we do it. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
You know, I like those. And I think finding like, you know, to follow along with your games-based approach, a coaching mentor of mine, you know, one way he'll work on rebounding is he says the best is I'll scrimmage and make offensive rebounds worth three. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, his way of let's try to get the offense to go hard off the glass because it's, you know, get some points. And then by virtue, we need to spend time thinking about how important defensive rebounding is, because if they get an offensive rebound, it's worth three. And then say they put it back, it's worth two more, that's worth five. So that's an approach he will take. I just think it gets down to how do you make it really important and how do you build up a system where you can watch it as the game goes down. I spoke to an assistant coach this weekend and he talked about, and as we're on the phone, I pulled up his Ken Palm numbers, his Ken Pomeroy numbers, and I was shocked to see just how of a rebounding team they were. And, you know, essentially at one point the conversation drifted to that. I said, you guys were just elite rebounding. He goes, we were good. You know, I'm not saying we're elite. And I said, oh, no, you're wrong. I mean, you guys, in the last 4 years, you led the country rebounding twice, you were second once, and you were fourth once. And what was amazing is he said, I had no idea we were that good rebounding. I said, so what was it? And he said, just my boss was maniacal about it. And I keep hearing that over and over again. And I wonder, is that the best way to do it? Is that place this huge, massive emphasis and tell your players, this is going to be really important to us. And I think the best way drill-wise to do it is just try to find unscripted situations where they're boxing out in space, like you said. And that's why I love what you're talking about with that one-on-one drill, because it's in space, and even the closeout drill, because you don't know necessarily what's going to happen and we're ready to react from those different situations.
Well, and it's easy to say everything you do is a rebounding drill, right?
And that's a great point, yep.
Every rebounding drill, you know, every one-on-one drill is a rebounding drill, et cetera, et cetera. And when you play offense versus defense, it's easier to do that. And it's emphasis and point systems is great. And I've thought about that. And we do that, by the way, coach, we have points for rebounds. But I always thought about it going, okay, if you're a team that does an offensive rebound and you emphasize getting back, are you giving point system for defensive rebounding? Like, because there's really no incentive to offensive rebound. So it's kind of skews the numbers. It's confused competitiveness a little bit too, in terms of that. So it's like, what's the value of that type of point system for a team that does an offensive rebound? And I don't know the answer either, but things to think about for coaches.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and the one I like so much about the games-based approach is that it really gets the coach to cross-teach. And I think that's, John Wooden said it, you know, so many years ago, that the ability of a coach is to be able to cross-teach, is to be able to work on two things at once and see different things. And I think that's why I like what you've done so much, is that you have that you essentially built into it is, can you do both? Can you pause something and say, hey, let's talk about our transition defense right there. And then let's also talk about, you know, making the right read offensively. It gets to the core of, can, as a coach, can you cross teach? Can you work on different things at once? You know, can you work on two different things at once?
Well, and again, that's how I feel I'd become a better coach, is because I've always cross taught. And, you know, that is obviously the advantage of being in that situation, is that I could never tell you how much time we spend on offense versus defense or versus rebound. I just have no idea, because I would never label anything we do as one of those things. It's all of those things. And it does help you maximize your time. So that's part of it. But coach, we could go many different places and we're going to have you back, because I know everyone's going to love this and they'll like us getting into things more. So are there some other trends that you've seen through all your study and everything that you think that we're not diving deep into enough as coaches? Or, you know, what are some of the things that you think would be most valuable for any type of coach at any level to be able to look at a little bit deeper?
Yeah, and I'm not going to speak for, you know, I'll talk about the college level because that's one that, you know, I'm obviously focused on. It's just really interesting, the battle right now for space, in that teams are trying to create it with range shooting. Teams are trying to create it because it allows you that opportunity to shoot those threes. And then the defenses fight to take that space away. And a lot of that answer has come down to a lot of times has been switching. And just that fight between the two on both ends of the offense trying to create space and the defense trying to take space away. I think at the end of the day, that's when I say the game, I think that could be the game of across a multitude of sports, is that fight for space. And it's really interesting to see kind of what direction that goes into for the college game of, as teams are trying to take working like crazy to take away threes, what is the offensive response to that? That's the thing I'm really looking at, that kind of battle game within a game of the switching to take away the threes and kind of where that's headed. That's something I'm fascinated by.
Well, and again, like, I mean, we're going to find that, you know, how a lot of teams, I think, have adapted to it this year, because I think that's been a big emphasis of a lot of coaches, I think, in the offseason, from at least talking to the ones that I've talked to for that. You know, the other thing that I really like that you said, and I don't think this is being said enough, and I don't remember your exact terminology here, but it was in your recent post about July and some of your thoughts on July, but you talked about the European model. And everyone kind of thinks that's the answer to basketball development. And I couldn't agree more that the European model is about the top. It has got nothing to do with the base.
And it's something that just drives me nuts, because I think in a lot of ways, you know, and I sound like, you know, the North American model, I'll say, like, is right in a lot of ways. It's not perfect, but like, I just find it amazing how people are so quick to just laud the European model of development. The European model, like you said, is for the top nth percent, the 6'9", 13-year-old, I mean, is plucked out of Latvia and signed to the top team in Spain and paid like a professional and goes to a basketball academy. Like, the European model is good for that. But like, if you were to take the, like, the 100th to 100, like, now part of it is our big population, but that's part of my theory, is that model, you can't take that model and bring it over to America and deal with the population that we have. Is there some brilliant teaching in Europe? Yes. But I think there's some things that we can pluck from that model. But just that constant glorification of the European model, people are missing out and people don't understand what that model looks like and just how players in early age are made professional in Europe. And I don't think anyone in America is fighting for that to happen in American basketball or North American basketball. So, like, understand when you talk about the European model, what you're referring to.
Well, and again, I could not agree more. And having been over there and seen it, I mean, this is not to discount that they don't have youth development. They do have tremendous youth development programs, but they're basically the same concepts that we have, you know, at the youth development level. They're just run by a professional club. But at the youth level, they're trying to develop the game the same way we are. And that's the base of it. But at the upper levels, they're just grabbing players and you know, that fit the prototype and, you know, or that have the skill. And then, like you said, from a young age, they're getting specialized training. And I don't believe, I mean, you would know it more than I, but I don't believe that type of model would work in the U.S. in any way, to move away from a scholastic model and to move away from, you know, a lot of the development models. But maybe the academy model might help develop players better once you get to that elite level. But getting to that elite level is a completely different deal.
Yeah, and I don't think right now people are clamoring for those elite academies, because simply I think that there is a marriage of athletics and academics in our country that doesn't exist in Europe, that, and I don't think anyone wants that, because I think it's, I mean, what it is making a guy professional at a very young age. Now, are there things that we can pluck out of what European coaches are doing? Absolutely. I mean, their ability to teach, and also how they've reduced the amount of competition and reduced the amount of games and really focus in on teaching. You know, I don't know how that exactly that would look like if it were brought to America, but like that in itself, of that they're going to practice, you know, in Europe, practice is 5-1, practice the game. And that's not the case in America. Oftentimes in America, it's closer to the opposite. But there's teaching that absolutely can be taken, but I just don't like that, you know, the grandstanding about the European model, and that's what we need to do without people understanding what that European model actually entails.
Well, not being American, I can say this to you, is that we would like the American model. You know, at the end of the day, I mean, come on. I mean, you guys produce the best players in the world for a reason. And, you know, whether it's flawed at some points of that, well, of course. I mean, all models are flawed to a certain extent. And can we do better? Absolutely. We can do better in a lot of ways. But at the top level, you're producing the best players in the world. And, you know, there's got to be value to that at the end of the day as well. So Canadian basketball would be a lot better if we had that base of players to draw from, which is really, again, the strength of the whole system you guys have, is that how many basketball players are there at the youth level? And from that pool, you're going to draw the best players and develop them. And it's just incredible. And the game keeps growing.
And that's something that I think constantly needs to be thought about, just over the mass numbers. And the development system isn't perfect, but I do think it needs to, just the sheer population and the amount of young people playing basketball needs to be taken into context when you're talking about those different models. And I do think there are some strides being made with the USA basketball model of educating and developing. I think there are some steps being made in that direction. I think at times that organization can do better, but, you know, again, I think we are going in the right direction.
No, that's great. And again, I think there's been so many positive developments in the game of basketball. And Coach, I believe your website is one of them. And I think it's tremendous. I know for me personally, one of the greatest advantages of Twitter or a website like yours is that most of us don't have time to search for the best articles. And when I see an article go up on yours, immediately I know it's worthy of my attention. So thank you for that, and keep doing that, because it's incredible that the time that you save me, even if I can't read it in the moment, I usually pocket what you do in my pocket app. You know, I can read it later and just know that I'm going to get some content that's going to help me develop as a coach.
I appreciate it. It's all born out of what I find interesting. I put up on the site, and hopefully other coaches, it resonates with other coaches. And I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, I'm glad it's been a resource, obviously.
Great. And Coach, you can go check out pickandpop.net, and Zach as well. And again, this is conversation where we focused a lot on defensive rebounding, but I know you and I will have more conversations and get back together again, and we'll dive into some of these other topics as well. So thanks for joining me, Coach.
I appreciate it, Chris.
To find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today, please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at basketballimmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.